It's Sustaining Alive with Rita Steele. Thanks to Scarecrow, your local kitchen, florist and grocer. Go to scarecrow.co.nz.
All right, Rita Steele, are you there?
Sure am. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you crystal clear.
Fantastic.
Now, hey Rita, what are we talking about this evening? We had a lot of global warming stories on the news.
I think it's safe to say some of the evidence of the impacts of climate change really starting to sort of hit home.
Mm-hmm.
So today's big news was the release of the new water levels around New Zealand and paints a picture of what our future is kind of going to look like, I think. And it's a little bit worse than what we initially thought. But we are kind of lucky in New Zealand because our population is so small and we still have a lot of, you know, usable land that we can shift to other parts of the country, although, of course, you know, that's pretty devastating for wildlife and that makes the problem worse and blah-de-blah-de-blah. But I think it is at least, you know, something that is an option for us. And if you think about a lot of the other countries that are going to see these sorts of sea level rises, and water table level rises, they simply can't do that, and that's going to be relatively horrific for a lot of people. And you know, I think I've seen a number that said 200 million climate refugees in the next 10 years, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a bit more than that. So yeah, so we're sort of starting to see these climate change impacts, and the other one that's just been talked about a lot in the last few days, if you've been keeping an eye on international environmental news, was a pretty awesome kind of data crunch on the Gulf Stream. So
I had heard that it was starting to slow down, but what does that actually mean if the Gulf Stream slows down?
Yeah, so the Gulf Stream is kind of, it's part of the world, you know, network of currents that help regulate the climate around the world. And I guess the way to think about it, I mean, it's called the global conveyor belt, or the other term they use is thermohaline circulation belt, which is basically currents as they water the ocean, warming up and rising to the top, cooling and sinking, and also the fresh water and the saline content. So as the water heats up, it gets more salty because water evaporates, and the water becomes more salty, and that sinks because it's heavy. Salt water is heavier and denser than fresh water, so it sinks to the bottom and then cools down and then moves, and so all that's kind of creating movement around the planet that helps regulate climates around the world. And the Gulf Stream is one part of this. So we've got one called Enzo, I think it's called, which is where we get La Nina and El Nino from, and we can talk about that another time because that's probably another piece of evidence that we're seeing some global impacts of climate change, because La Nina is now in its third year, which is pretty unusual. So we're just starting to see some of these natural patterns, I guess they're called, changing on us. And it's not to say that they haven't changed before, it's just that they're happening very quickly now, whereas in the past they've happened pretty slowly. And also, these things haven't in the past necessarily happened when humans have been alive, and certainly when we've been at the numbers that mean we can't shift to adapt to it, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So just going back to the Gulf Stream, this is the surface, this is kind of the water flow that runs from the Gulf of Mexico, and it goes up past Florida and then up towards New York, and then from there it kind of crosses the Atlantic and splits a little bit and basically goes up towards Norway and those sorts of countries, across to England, and then down just a tiny bit, but definitely hits that west coast of Europe. And what it means is that it keeps those areas quite warm. So if you look at where England or Scotland sort of sit on a world map, and you look directly across the Atlantic Ocean from there is Canada. And Canada doesn't get the it doesn't get the Gulf Stream because the Gulf Stream crosses the Atlantic before it hits Canada. So if you look directly across and map the different temperatures, there's a 30-degree difference at certain points in time between those two places, even though they're at the same latitude, I think it is, on the map. So the same horizontal axis on the map. So the theory is that the Gulf Stream is keeping the west of Europe quite warm, or much warmer than it would be without it. And what we're seeing is because we have heated up the atmosphere and the oceans have absorbed some of that heat, what we're seeing is that Gulf Stream has been pushing higher and higher and higher up into the Arctic and actually helping melt that ice up there. And then what that's doing is dumping fresh water into the system. And if you look at the graphs from the last 100 years, that fresh water change, the salinity change in the ocean in the Atlantic is huge. So it's huge even right down to 200 metres, so deep in the ocean. So what we're seeing is that there's less of that movement, up and down movement of water that's becoming more salty and sinking. So as a result, the whole site, circulation of that water is slowing down. So yeah, so that's they now have enough evidence to say that's what's happening. If you have seen the movie, I think it's called The Day After Tomorrow. This is the premise of that movie, but it happens in 3 days in that movie, or in a very short window of time. This looks like it's kind of happening over the last over about 100-150 years. So it is a bit slower than that. If it shuts down completely, it triggers a ice age. And I guess my way of saying this is that it's kind of the Earth trying to regulate itself. So it's sort of saying, okay, you're melting things, like let's find some balance here. And the Earth seeks equilibrium. That's how nature works. It's constantly trying to seek equilibrium. So it's its way of kind of doing that, I guess. So that's what has triggered one of the reasons that they believe the ice age has been triggered in the past. So if it shut down completely, it would trigger an ice age. They doubt it's going to trigger an ice age, that it's going to shut down completely. But what we probably will see is that we will see much harsher winters in Europe. And, I guess the tricky part with that is that if we're also seeing some of the effects of climate change, you're also seeing much hotter summers. So it's a pretty gnarly... going to become a pretty gnarly extreme place to live. And then what the other thing that it's going to do is it's actually going to build up warm water on that east coast of the US. And that's a major problem for the US, firstly because it means that the water levels will be a lot higher than they were expecting here. And it also means that there's more energy for those hurricanes they'll sit off the coast there, building up energy. In the past, they've come up from the tropics, from the Caribbean, and as they've got to that cooler water, they slow down and they hit the coast as less extreme hurricanes. Now what they'll do is they'll sit out on that coast and they'll still have lots of energy to draw. And to give you some example of what that actually looks like, this is what happened in Sandy. So can you remember Hurricane Sandy hit New York probably like 5-6 years ago?
Everything flooded?
Yeah, it was the big one that shut down, like, New York for quite a while, at least a week, I think. People were unable to take subways and whatnot. But that was a really good example of what the future could potentially look like, because the water temperature when Sandy hit was much higher than normal, and that's, representative of what we're seeing in this area going to be happening more and more. So Sandy was able to build up energy on that coast instead of, running out of energy and hitting the coast as a tropical storm. It was still, I think it was a Category 4 or 5 still at that point. And then when it hit the coast, it actually left behind water that was 4-6 degrees colder than it was before, the couple of hours before Sandy went through. So that's how much energy it's actually drawing up from the ocean and, dumping as as water and wind onto the you know, some of the most populated parts of the planet. So that's, you know, that's going to be a major problem as well. And then of course fisheries are going to be massively impacted. So yeah, it's a pretty scary thing. But I guess it's, again, you know, just one of those examples of the many actual, you know, fallouts of climate change.
Okay, there it is. Climate change. I mean, is there anything we can do in the immediate future to speed up the Gulf Stream?
I mean, we all know what we need to do. The biggest one, I saw another article that came out that said we need to cut 75% of meat consumption to help save the planet. And, you know, I've yabbered on about this for a long time. What I would love to see, and still haven't actually seen it yet, is a budget for people, you know, a meat budget for people, so that, and a dairy budget, so they kind of know what, you know, what's a sustainable amount, because it's
one steak a week.
Meat consumption by 75% is a pretty arbitrary number for a lot of people. Some people have three meals of meat a day, and then others might have it once a month. So it'd be nice to have a number for people, like, hey, if you were
one mince pie a week.
Exactly, like something tangible. Like, I would love to see that, and I think that, you know, I mean, what worries me is, you know, we had so much pushback on mask wearing even, so it's like asking people to cut down their meat consumption will get pushback like we've never seen before. But I think even if it's just, you know, like a responsible citizen thing, and maybe over time we can shift it. I think it's going to be a really hard thing to change, because we have seen people's reaction to, you know, an imminent threat like COVID, and how much pushback there was from a small minority on some really basic things like wearing a mask, and that seemed to permeate through society and create a lot of risk, you know, like division. When really, it just, you know, climate change changes are going to require a lot more sacrifice than that.
Well, contrary to that, Rita, I guess the plastic bag at the supermarket, not too much pushback on that.
Potentially, no, exactly.
You know, if we just really go like, all right, you just get one, this is your amount of red meat a week, here you go.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Or even if they introduce it at first as a voluntary concept, and then people just start getting... You know, we might have a tipping point, right, where you get a lot of people just becoming, that's becoming the norm, and then all of a sudden, just like drink driving, right, there was a time where our parents thought it was fine to drink drive, and then slowly over time it became pretty antisocial to drink drive, and then it became, you know, it was always pretty illegal, but, you know, then it just became massively frowned upon, and there was this tipping point where it didn't happen, it just doesn't happen now. Well, I mean, minority that do, but you know, I think that we can socially introduce the stuff, whether or not it's going to be fast enough, but if it's happening in conjunction with us seeing some of these changes, then maybe people will be more willing to do it as well.
Sure. All right, hey Rita Steele, thank you very much for another edition of Sustaining Alive. We'll check in with you next week.
Have a good week.
Okay, bye.
Sustaining Alive on 95BFM. Thanks to Scarecrow, your local kitchen, florist and grocer. Go to scarecrow.co.nz.